Hello and welcome to another episode of 10,000 Hours. I'm Grant Spanier.
And I'm Vince Cochi.
Silky smooth as always, Vince. Your voice is just a delight. Thank you for joining
me. Please flatter me.
What a fun episode we had. It was an inspiring one.
It's safe to say it was unlike any other guest.
Seriously, yeah. And we recorded this at like 7 in the morning, something like that, 6 or 7 in the morning.
6 a.m.
Yeah.
Central Standard Time.
Our guest was coming to us from the UK, and our guest was Alastair Humphreys. You may not know the name, but wow, this guy has done some insane stuff. I mean,
he's an intrepid fellow, yes.
Totally. He has traveled around the world. The very first, big project he did was a cycling tour of the world, that took him 4 years. And, he biked around the world and then took a ship between the continents and then went home. It's just like insane.
It's a bit insane. He also, if correct me if I'm wrong, rode the Atlantic at some point.
Yeah.
And, was named one of National Geographic's Adventurers of the Year.
Yeah.
He came on to talk to us about adventure, but more specifically about getting up and going and doing something and finding the motivation to take that first step forward, be it a baby step or a giant leap like he did. And it was an enlightening conversation to kind of relate his real world adventures to more creative project based mm-hmm. thought line.
Well, the cool thing was we were realizing there were so many parallels between undertaking some of those projects and getting started on creative projects. And two, what I really appreciated was him talking about micro adventures and really boiling it down to very manageable things. It's like a cool perspective.
Absolutely. And he's just a charming guy.
God, hell of an accent. That kills us every time. I feel like
we
just kind of ogle at the mics because we just, and I want to take a moment to thank this week's sponsor of the show, and that is Sanebox. If you're a longtime listener, you've heard me talk about them before. It's a tool I love so much. I use it basically to manage my email inbox, which is a kind of a sacred place.
Sanctum.
Yeah, it really is. It allows you to train it and it automatically filters out a lot of crap. Anything promotional. Basically everything that goes into my inbox for the most part is a very specific action item or direct contact from somebody. So you can train it to go to your inbox or skip your inbox. And it's very cheap. I'm a big fan of Sanebox, especially if you're trying to get more organized. I would definitely look into Sanebox as a tool. Also, they're not paying us for this, but Boomerang is another fantastic email tool. Those two things save my email life. I hate email. So thank you
but
to Sanebox.
You hate it less.
I do. I really do. It makes it okay. And check them out. Go to our landing page if you want to sign up for a free trial. Try it out. This is okay. Sanebox.com.
It's a free trial, people.
Yeah, it's totally free. Sanebox.com/10KHRS. That's 10KHRS. Thank you, Sanebox. Thank you, Vince. Thank you,
Grant.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, kind listener.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
Episode
Who else? Is there anybody
48?
Else?
Alistair.
Thank you, Alistair. Yeah, okay, we forgot somebody.
Episode 48. Get up and go.
You have a delightful photo, by the way, on your Skype. He's got a big fur wrapping your face, framing your face, and kind of icy red beard.
It's nice. Yeah, I think with some real life ice in the beard.
yeah, totally. So, Mr. Vince, could you just could you regale me? Could you tell me what you're putting your time into? What are you working on?
I'd love to, Grant, and I'm glad you asked. I'm doing some work on the old website, getting more portfolio pieces together. And, I'm encountering a small challenge. Ooh. In that it's not always as easy to get a quick snapshot on the writing work you've done for a project as it is for perhaps, the design work. If you post some great-looking design, it sometimes speaks for itself, but mm-hmm. Not always true of writing, so I've been doing that, and I'm also busy at the office working on a unique kind of project where I'm helping plan and lay out the Minnesota Children's Museum annual fundraising gala.
Oh.
So that's for a good cause, for a good cause.
For the kids.
For the pro bono work I actually enjoy doing. So that's nice.
Yeah, glad to hear it.
Yeah, keep me busy. Grant, please, if you would want to reciprocate.
You know what? I will. You know, I'm jamming on a few different things. Biggest thing right now, I'm planning a bit of a trip heading to Tokyo. I think by the time this episode drops, it'll be already done. But, yeah, making a music video next week. Kind of spur of the moment, a little crazy, but
it's extremely exciting.
Yeah, real pumped. And I think that's, you know, that spur of the moment heading somewhere far away is very much in the vein of our guest today, who I am very excited to talk to. You know, I guess I would call him adventurer, author, motivational speaker. That's
not
described.
Yes. Just adventurer. One of National Geographic's top adventurers. It's
And we're gonna dig into this,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. What? It, I mean, just a sampling, right? Cycled around the world, walked across India, rode the Atlantic. You know, just a couple of small trips there.
Yeah.
Mr. Alastair Humphreys, welcome to 10,000 Hours.
Hello, thank you for
having me. Did I pronounce it right there?
You pronounce it wonderfully, well done.
Thank you, he's very supportive, you're a supportive guest.
And Mr. Humphreys is joining us from England, London, England, and that is where you hail from originally?
I'm originally from Yorkshire, England, but I now live down near London, England. But yeah, England's the common thread.
Nice.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Yeah, and could you tell us what you're putting your time into? What are you working on these days?
At the moment, I'm writing a couple of books. I'm writing a follow-on to my most recent book about micro-adventures, and this is a sort of guidebook trying to help people actually take concrete steps to go from dreaming about adventure to making adventure actually happen. Because I think that's the hardest part of all, is making it get going. And I'm also writing a book for kids about a boy who cycles around the world.
Oh, man.
Wow, that's really cool.
It's not pro bono, though. I'm not as nice as you guys.
But still, yeah, for the kids, we'll count it.
And you're not paying me for this, so we'll call it. This is my pro bono podcast.
Yeah.
This is your giving back. Well, great. That's awesome. And I think I'm glad that you brought up your concept of micro-adventures. I've been reading up on that, and I think it just fits so perfectly into the thesis of our show and the thesis behind today's topic, which is quite simply get up and go. Shipping it is something we talk about a lot on 10,000 Hours. And what is that but not a different iteration of the get up and go concept, which is you have to do things for things to get done, and talking about them and postulating about them is a good way not to do them. So I think what I'd like to touch on before we even get into that, though, is to can you share your personal story with us just a bit? How does one get into adventuring? Where do I apply?
Well, to me, though, that is apropos to the subject, which is get up and go, as in, like, what is the get up and go that you have in you? Because I think a lot of people would look at you and be like, this guy's insane. Right?
Well, I grew up, not grew up, actually, it was only when I was at university, really, that I started having any interest in adventure and travel and expeditions. And I used to read books of all these amazing people who'd done fantastic journeys. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I grew up. And all I knew was that I didn't want to do something boring just because that's what everyone else was doing. And what I really wanted to do and what really excited me was go on a massive journey. So I decided to take the punt and go and try and ride my bike all the way around the world. And I did that just because I wanted to do it, because it felt exciting and important to me. Mm-hmm. And it was a long, long time after that before I even contemplated trying to make it my life. So in the first case, it was just something I really, really wanted to do. And even though everyone else thought it was quite stupid and not very sensible, it was just the thing that felt the most exciting to me in life.
That is an interesting thing, like just like following your bliss, following your passion there, your gut.
And in the face of skepticism.
Yeah, I think it's an important thing to do, because if I set off on this bike trip and halfway to China realized I hated it, then I could have just come home and become an accountant. It wasn't, it's not like a catastrophic thing that you can never go back on in life. And I think very, very few things are. We tend to think a decision is so monumental, but usually it's not nearly so big as we fear it might be.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you can go back if things are going wrong and you're not happy, but you can't like really go there if you decide that you didn't like the accounting job all of a sudden. And I guess you can, but it's sort of like, if you don't go, that's usually where the regret comes from. Not if you do.
Yeah. I was lucky in that I went straight after university. So when you have far fewer commitments in life than someone who is an accountant now, but perhaps dreams of it, things are more difficult to do. But geez, if it's something you want to do, then you've got to try to make it happen.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And so you get back on this round the world bike trip, and
it's like
four years?
Yeah, 4 years.
Unbelievable. And obviously that's going to be a formative experience. How does it eventually parlay into a lifestyle where you're not only doing this and adventuring more or less for your lifestyle, but helping other people do the same in many ways?
When I got home from cycling around the world, I wanted to write a book about it, just because I like reading and I like writing, and I wanted to use my brain after sitting on a bike for 4 years. And so to pay for my life while I wrote that book, I started just giving talks to kids in local schools, and at first for free, pro bono, I'm nice. And then gradually I got hungry, so I started then charging people. And it's that then started to evolve into me thinking that it might become a viable option for me to just commit to making adventure my job. So go off, do an adventure, come home, write a story, share my story, do a lot of blogging, online stuff, try and encourage other people to get out on their adventures. And so the cycle continues.
See, this is fantastic. Like, I really think this is fantastic advice for people, which is that if you go try something, you can adjust, you can experiment, you can pivot, you can call it quits, whether that was with, you know, your actual adventures, or even from a business standpoint. You were doing the thing for free, you were talking, you were giving talks, and that's how you get started in a thing. A lot of people like are spinning their wheels and trying to figure out, well, like, oh, they need like this big business plan in order to make the leap. And I really admired just like going after that. That's fantastic.
Well, I think I'm not the sort of person who would ever get around to doing a big business plan about anything. So I do things that I enjoy doing, and I get bored quite quickly. So if I don't like it, I'll stop. But if I enjoy it, then I want to try and do it really well. And if I start doing something I enjoy and doing it well, then I think if there's a niche for it, which there is for just about anything in life, then you can start to monetize it later. But that for me comes very far down the line of how I get started and why I do it.
Man. Okay. So let me ask you a question about when you came back from that trip. That must have been, like Vince said, formative, but did you have any sort of like withdrawal or anything when you did come back, or like, how was processing that?
It was hard, and it still is hard.
Yeah.
I loved it for a few months, being home, just not having to ride that stupid bike anymore, and sleeping in a bed and seeing my friends and just belonging in a community. I loved those things for a few months. Mm-hmm. And then the novelty of that started to wear off a little bit. And then I started to realize that perhaps I would never do anything quite so epic and full of life ever again. And that's when I started to get a bit depressed about it all. And I think that's quite common for people who do big, difficult things, especially if you do it thinking that that will provide the meaning of life and you'll come home and all your problems will be solved. So I found it quite hard, and I still do, to a degree, find it quite hard to have done something so big but to have done it by myself, so no one really understands, no one really cares.
Yeah, in an Into the Wild sense, happiness only real if shared, right? Or like,
to a degree, there's that. But there's also, once you've expanded your horizons, literal ones, but also the ones within yourself, then it's harder to just settle for a normal life after that.
Yeah, wow.
I think it's great to strive and be ambitious and push yourself hard, but I also think some little man who owns a sweet shop in a small little town and is very happy is probably a lucky person indeed.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's what
absolutely.
It is.
And I think this is going to parlay well into our what I would like to talk about with you next, Alistair, which is this concept of micro adventures, which is something I thought was very interesting because I'll let you describe it in your own words, but essentially the idea is adventure as a word doesn't have to be this daunting monolith of a concept. It's something that we can find in smaller places, in more intimate places, and something that's very achievable for almost anyone. So if you want to just introduce us to that topic quickly, and it'll guide us along to the next couple things I want to talk about.
I spent a few years of my life after cycling around the world chasing other big journeys. So walking across deserts and rowing across the Atlantic Ocean and big sort of journeys, those things that I love doing. But people would talk to me, maybe read my books, come to my talks, and people love adventure, but those sort of things are not realistic for real people with real lives in the real world. And so I noticed there was this slight disconnect between people who like the idea of adventure but don't actually do it themselves because they haven't got the time or the money or the skills or the fitness or whatever. And so I wanted to try and show that, in my opinion, adventure is too important to neglect just because you don't think you've got the time. So if you haven't got the time to go and climb Mount Everest, then instead, you shouldn't just sit at home doing nothing. You should go climb your local hill and sleep on top of it for one night under the stars with your friends, come back down in the morning, swim in a river, and go back to work. There's a nugget of adventure in there, which is far better than doing nothing at all. So it's about working out what the barriers are in your life that stop you doing the adventures you yearn of, and working with them, working around them, rather than just seeing them as excuses so that you can just sit at home and do nothing.
And
that's the essence of it.
Yeah, and that's I love that. I love that so much because it's so approachable, it's accessible, it's trying to like bring that to people. And even when we're talking about bigger creative projects, a lot of what we talk about is like getting started on something, on anything, you know. I mean, as simple as opening up a notebook and scribbling, like just getting started on something kind of sets you down a path toward maybe the bigger and the grander ambitions. But so many people get stuck before that even starts, you know, with those excuses and with there are a million excuses.
Yeah, well, I think that's absolutely critical with expeditions and journeys as well, is that they're very exciting to contemplate, but once you decide you're going to do something, it's then really hard. There's so many difficult, hard things you need to do, so it's quite easy then to not bother at all. So if you want to go climb Mount Everest, but you can't be bothered to go out the front door and go walk up your local hill, then you'll never climb Everest. So you've just got to, getting beginning is absolutely critical to the whole concept of microventures. Because once you've slept on a hill once, if you enjoy it, you might go do it again, and a bigger hill. And before you know it, you'll be joining the queue of everyone else who's paid to go up Mount Everest.
I want to like steal this term and I want to like reappropriate it for like, even just micro projects. I hesitate to say that this is exactly the same, but I do see a lot of at least construct similarities in taking on like an Everest of a project, you know, like a big project.
Absolutely.
You know, it's
absolutely
like it's a huge undertaking, and it's a mental undertaking. I mean, of course, the actual physical adventure, it's likely extremely mental is maybe your biggest factor there, but it's really interesting to me.
Yeah, and it's making me almost laugh with the notion that I could compare like starting your own business or starting like an intense project at
writing
work,
a film, or like
exactly,
you know what I mean? Some of those things
would be comparable to, you know, cycling across
the world, for God's sake. Yeah,
well,
but
let me say, I think most people who go cycle across continents and climb giant mountains are doing that because it's infinitely easier than trying to set up a business or do anything in the real life. So I think that is absolutely the truth.
The unbelievable irony. It is, man, that is really interesting because I just think about even like I'm working on some film stuff and like a short film right now, and like I'm physically, you know, maybe moving much less and I'm very warm and safe here, but I am like, I'm living with this thing, you know, and it's until I've fully realized it, I do feel like it's like stuck in my head, you know? So it's a different, I'm expressing in a different way and I'm like running away from it in a different way, but, less than, the miles you've taken under, but, like miles, mental miles, maybe.
Yes.
So you've spoken to fans of your work and spoken at events and motivationally. Have you ever encountered this? And this is the person that says, you know, I admire what you do. I would love to, but I'm just not an adventurer. I'm just not that type of person. And if so, what credence do you lend to that school of thought, or how do you refute maybe that type of excuse?
I hear that all the time, and the thing that I emphasize, and this is really very true, is that I am not some sort of adventure person either. I'm not some daredevil, adrenaline junkie, super athlete, Superman at all. I'm a normal, wimpy guy who gets scared of the dark and all these things, just like everyone else. But I chose to make this stuff happen. And once I began it, that being the terrifying, difficult, daunting part, once I began it, I realized that, honestly, cycling a bike for thousands of miles is a very easy thing to do. The scary thing is to, before you begin it, and you imagine all the things that are going to be hard. So I just try and emphasize that anyone could do the things that I do. And that's not some sort of false modesty. It's totally the truth. And it's just people who often say, I can't do something, or I don't have the time, I don't have the money, I don't have the skills. I think a good thing to do is to replace the word don't with I choose not to. So I choose not to have the time, I choose not to use my money for this, and to see then where your priorities really, really lie.
Yeah, well, it's scary to acknowledge that.
Yeah, and we all do that. Yeah, exactly. And all of us can make ourselves uncomfortable with the things that we choose not to do with our lives.
Yeah, that sort of forced introspection and making you realize your priorities. That's sometimes a daunting thing in and of itself. We encounter a similar kind of mindset sometimes in the creative industry where somebody says, I'm just not a creative person. Mm-hmm. But I think, Grant, your and my own feeling toward that is very much the same, is that everyone has the capacity for creativity.
Yes.
If only they would allow it to be found in themselves.
Yeah, it's just like adventuring. It's not like a genetic thing. You can choose to flex the creative muscle. You can choose to become an adventurer. It really is a matter of choice. Of course, there maybe are smaller decisions, almost like micro decisions, micro adventures to get there, but it really is within, I would say, anyone's reach. I don't even want to say almost anyone's, you know.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you have to bear in mind there are some people in life who have genuine constraints on their life.
Yes, right.
And I'm in the very fortunate position. I had a university education, so I knew that if my adventuring failed, someone this week will give me a job somewhere. I'm not going to starve to death. And I think having that safety net of confidence is a huge thing.
That's a good point. That is a really good point.
Yeah, and I just want to echo the fact that even though you had a backup plan, it still took an immense amount of vulnerability to attempt it. And I think people can see that sort of maybe the balance or the risk in their own lives, and just understand that even on a smaller scale, the worst thing that can happen is, I don't know, it doesn't go well and you have to start anew. And maybe the end of the world.
Yeah, the worst thing that can happen is that you fail. And I realized that when I was trying to summon up the courage to make myself go and do the bike trip, that what was scaring me wasn't trying to go through scary sounding countries or falling off a mountain or getting eaten by a bear. It was the thought of failing, coming home and everyone laughing at me because I'd failed. And that bothered me more than anything, which is really stupid.
Yeah. I don't feel like that's stupid at all. I mean, in the creative industry, it's, you have to make yourself vulnerable and present your work and kind of shed the armor oftentimes. And that's something, there's a fear of being laughed at or a fear of being told your work is bad. I would actually be interested in how you coped with that or how you addressed it, or if you never did and you just said, to hell with it, I'll do it anyway, despite the fact that people might laugh at me. I'm curious about how you resolve that.
I've just tried to give myself a good British talking to. that is an utterly ridiculous way to be living my life as a grown man, to be more concerned about someone sneering at me than anything else. And the sort of people who do sneer at me and laugh at me and would relish in me failing something are not really the sort of people whose opinion should matter to me in my life. But they do, of course. It's the same way where you get 100 good reviews on Amazon, you don't care, and then someone writes a mean one about you and it bothers you for days. Mm-hmm. You go around inventing lots of witty comebacks if you ever happen to meet them.
So true.
Yeah, that's, man.
But then if you actually met them, you wouldn't dare say those things.
Right. Well, and neither would they, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
But
yeah,
right. I feel like that's probably a thing that never really goes away. I think we had like Seth Godin on, and he talked similarly about it's a constant dance with fear. It's a constant. It's not like all of a sudden, because I think we talked about self-awareness with him, which is kind of fundamental to us. To me, it seems fundamental in being able to ward off the quote unquote haters, which is, I know I'm being authentic to myself because I do feel in tune with myself. And so the things that I'm doing and the actions I'm taking are a product of that. And so to me, that is like kind of makes it fail proof. It makes it like, even if someone thinks this is really stupid, I think this is interesting, or I think this is a part of me, or this is like a passion of mine. Of course, it's not quite that easy, but I think that is kind of where some of those things can come from.
I agree.
So, man, could you, I just want to hear a little bit, maybe to give the listeners a little bit more context. So your personal story. So you got back, you wrote the books, you wrote a book.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I wrote a book, and which this is a good example in that I sent it off to thousands of publishers trying to get it published, and everyone rejected it. So it got rejected by all publishers. And I was on the verge of just accepting that I was a terrible writer and I should just give that up altogether. But I decided to self-publish it. So that was a really big thing of taking a risk and saying, despite all the experts saying that my book is rubbish, I think it's brilliant, so I'm going to publish it anyway. There's so much hubris and vanity and risk involved in that. But I did it, and it went quite well. And then a publisher picked it up, and I decided then to write a second book and a third book. And then after the third book, I decided to try and make it my job. And so to say, right, this from now on, this is how I'm going to earn my living and pay my taxes, is by being an adventurer. And I've been doing it for quite a few years since then.
That's phenomenal. That's a story that you do hear come up sometimes, is that the your work was kind of disregarded by the established infrastructure of publishing, but one man's vanity is another man's self-belief and confidence. Mm-hmm. And so you really did believe in your work, and that belief showed through because people reacted to it, obviously.
But I also, it wasn't entirely that I thought that the book was good. it was that I thought the book was really important to me, and that I needed to get it published to have completed the project. The project being cycle around the world and then write a book. And so it wasn't necessarily this assumption that it was brilliant, because I think quite a lot of people who start things don't think they're brilliant, but you might feel that it's meaningful and important to you. And that was what mattered the most, was that I got this book published, and that the handful of people whose opinions I care about would say, this is a good story. Mm-hmm. That was all I was really after.
Well, it's funny. So many people cut their own legs out from under themselves by, like, you know, underselling the work or not believing it. And it's funny to think that if you think it's the most important thing in the world, then sometimes it can become that, right? Because you can convince other people and not necessarily deceive them, but no
just
one else
fill
is
them with
it.
That same belief, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you're doing something that you're passionate and excited about, and therefore doing as well as you can possibly do, then if there's a niche for that, then you're probably onto something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I guess I'll take this opportunity to kind of call back to the through line of the show, which is get up and go. And this a bit of a double meaning, one being the actual command that you would give yourself to get out there and do something, and the other being this kind of inward get up and go in quotation marks spirit that drives you, that fuels you as an individual. It might be a little cliche, but I would wonder if you, Alistair, have any kind of tips, insights into how people can start to awaken that in themselves.
Well, if I just refer to my world and the things that I do, it's the idea of micro adventures is all about that, of just trying to find something that is, well, assuming that you're vaguely interested in the topic, whatever your topic might be, is to then find the smallest, tiniest little thing that you can do in that kind of field. So unbelievably tiny that there's no valid reason not to do it. And the only reason to not do it is just because you're a pathetic loser who hates themselves. And therefore, if you want to go and get into adventuring stuff, but you can't be bothered to get your duvet and your pillow and drag it out of your house and go sleep in your garden under the stars and see the moon, then you're not going to get anywhere. So I've been really trying to encourage people just to find the tiniest, smallest little thing they can do just to get in motion. Don't fret about the big giant thing you're dreaming of at some point. Just do something to get you going. And once you get in motion, then the rest is infinitely, infinitely easier.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. We've spoken about that. It's a very similar idea. We say like treading water. If you just keep treading water, you know, eventually you drown. But if you just start swimming in any direction, it's just easier to pivot and to adjust and to move forward.
Exactly.
And that, I mean, in writing terms, that's like the old thing of you just sit down in the morning with a piece of paper and just write off the top of your head whatever goes churning through your head. Quite a lot of writers do that sort of thing just to get you writing away. And there's a great book of Steinbeck's when he was writing, I think it was The Grapes of Wrath. Every morning he'd write a letter to his agent, which he didn't intend to send, just to get him write, do that, and then he'd get on with his book every morning. And there's a book now, a book of all those letters, which is
amazing.
One of my favorite books.
Wow, we'll show notes that. We'll have to check that out. That sounds so interesting.
That sounds fascinating, yeah. Well, great. This is that is good advice, and that's something certainly that we've heard echoed, maybe not in quite so visceral a way as physical and lifestyle adventuring, but in all creative work, it is about taking that first step, that first most difficult step, and then at the end of the day, even if that step is all you took, you can at least say to yourself, I took a step, and it fuels your future steps. Before we jettison into a kind of a different realm of conversation, I'm curious what's on the horizon for Alistair Humphreys. What is coming up next, and what's maybe your next big adventure?
I don't know. I really don't know. And I've been for a while. I've been really beating myself up that I don't know. But I'm a bit more relaxed now. The micro adventures thing I've been doing has been really popular. It's been really growing, and I've really enjoyed that. For the first time, I'm doing something in the adventure world that isn't purely selfish and
about you.
Just showing off about how amazing I am. Mm-hmm. And And so I'm really enjoying the microvillage thing. And what I want to do is try and grow that idea beyond the current niche of people, which is generally people who like outdoors and adventure. Mm-hmm. And what I want to do is try and reach people who don't know they like this yet. People who don't know that they would enjoy sleeping on a hill or swimming in a river. So trying to reach that wider audience. That's but I don't really know how I'm going to do that.
Yeah, and I think we actually were introduced to you via Mapcha, which those guys were on the show. And how you've been using that platform some, right, to tell some stories?
Yeah, that's they're a great example of getting something started and building it into something really big and beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I like doing stuff with them just because it helps me reach a new audience and perhaps people who like travel more than the expedition type stuff. So trying to broaden my reach.
So you're trying to make it like just like the adventures, you're almost making your stories a little bit more accessible to a smaller scale. That's cool. And we love those guys. Those guys are great.
Yeah, they were a fantastic conversation. Mm-hmm. And also I think hopefully I'm not offending our past guests, but these two are the finest, Mapcha and you, Mr. Humphreys, the finest accents we've ever had.
Yeah, real top notch. Yeah,
it's been absolutely lyrical conversation. And speaking of getting off the topic at hand, I think this is as good a time as any to transition into this week's OTT. And this is the off-topic topic, the chance we take to talk to our guests about something that doesn't have anything to do with anything. And so when
well,
Grant
something
and I,
to do with something, probably.
arguably. Grant and I were talking before we got on the horn with you, and something came up that we thought was pretty funny, and that was we were kicking around the idea of what would a perfect day look like for him, for myself, and how wildly and outrageously different would the perfect day of Mr. Alistair Humphreys look. And so it is with an open mind and a lot of curiosity I ask you, Mr. Humphreys, what does your perfect day look like?
Well, there would be two very different answers to this. And the one answer would be the answer that I would give to you today, sitting at home in my shed behind my computer, just doing a day of doing boring emails and talking to boring people on Skype. And my first answer then would be that my perfect day would involve waking up at sunrise by a lake, on a mountain, anywhere outdoors, swimming in a river, jumping on a bike, cycling a long way, talking to random people I've never met before, and then collapsing exhausted at sunset, falling asleep by a campfire. When I'm actually out on the open road, exhausted and having to sleep by a campfire, my perfect day would involve being in a nice big fluffy bed with a giant cup of coffee and watching a lot of football on TV whilst eating Chinese takeaway in my pajamas all day. Which I guess says that the grass is always greener for all of us, whatever we happen to be doing in life.
I can't even articulate how happy that answer makes me, because I think your while adventuring perfect day sounds a lot like my everyday perfect day.
And that well, there you are. You are living the dream.
That's right.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll put that on my tombstone. Alistair Humphreys said I was living the dream. that is very cool to hear though. And I think it might even seem a bit silly on its face, but it's a very human and very understandable emotion to have. Is that, you know, we want these things in our life. We long for adventure or we long for comfort, but when we have one, then we'll be longing for the other.
Perpetually unhappy, I think, is what you were talking about. Vinny, so you alluded to it. What does your day look like?
Well, you know, I think it's funny because during my days of rest, my off days, I actually wake up much earlier than I do when I'm headed into the office, which I don't know. Yeah. Please don't psychoanalyze that and please don't listen, bosses. But I will usually wake up fairly early. I'll go get coffee and I'll sit in the shop and drink it. And then I'll attempt to do something routinely productive before I go into an absolute spiral of finding what I want to eat for lunch and then watching TV while I eat it and then deciding, well, it's my day off. I might as well start with a beer, even though it's 3:30. And then 8 hours later, I'm at the bar with some friends and I've not done anything remotely productive and I pass out and wake up at around 11 the next day.
Look at that.
That sounds like a fairly perfect day to me.
That's nice. I was just thinking originally when we first thought about this, I was thinking about, like what that perfect day would be and like hanging out at home or hanging out with people or whatever. But now that I'm like thinking back, honestly, I think some of my happiest times have been on the road in some form, like either that trip we took, you know, a few years ago or, but maybe it's in retrospect. Maybe not. I do feel like when I'm traveling, I just feel like turned on in a totally different way. And especially when you're among friends, that's almost the perfect situation. So Vince and I took this like 2-week road trip and we shot this documentary like 2.5-3 years ago. And now I'm thinking, Vince, having you and Laura and Jake, it's almost like we had the comfort of home on the road, but then we still had that adventure. It was like that perfect in between.
Yeah, we had that little touch of family that we could, and the car. And the ratty motels, like, were very much our comfort zones. I've never been happier to be in a Motel 6 with, I think, an actual hole in the wall than I was when we were in Thousand Oaks, California. That's another good illustration is that you can find home with you in different places. It doesn't always have to be coming back to the apartment and sitting in your pajamas. It can be, you know, a quiet moment relaxing with friends at a Motel 6.
Yeah. So to segue us, did you have any or do you have any specific things when you're on the road or when you're adventuring that are kind of like totems or things that make you feel safe or bring you back to home?
Not really. And I actually find on expeditions that the more I can be completely separated from home, the more I'm able to just appreciate being in the moment, doing what I'm doing at the time. Because the things that I'm doing out there are usually more difficult, more scary, more uncomfortable than normal life would be. And therefore, I think the natural instinct is to be slightly wishing it was all over and you were back at home. Mm-hmm. So I think the more I can just be in that moment, the more I get out of it, I think.
Yeah. No, that is a good point and a fascinating point. I think finding comfort is definitely a means of getting through something. And if you're the one that has embarked on this adventure, this journey, you're the one that's set out to, you know, take it all in. It makes sense not to take moments of distraction from it and to get as much out of it as possible, as you're the one who has wanted to do it in the first place. After all, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but I guess slightly leads on to the difference between doing a journey by yourself when you can really leave everything behind except what's in your head versus doing it with a friend when you have some sort of shared history and spend a lot of time just talking about the good old days. Mm-hmm. And there's pros and cons of both those things, I think.
Have you ever done an adventure with a close friend?
Yeah, I generally try to alternate doing a solo trip versus a trip with someone else. I roughly alternate those.
Do you have a preference, or you just mentioned they were good for their own ways?
I think that the trips I do on my own are usually much more miserable and masochistic and about character building and that sort of stuff, but that you can feel very proud of in the long run because you've done it all by yourself. Mm-hmm. Whereas the trips I do with other people are fun, more fun and enjoyable, but perhaps less transformative.
Yeah, I would say less profound. I mean, on a smaller scale, I've like traveled alone quite a bit, and that versus being with people, it totally changes the dynamic. You know, like sitting in an airport alone versus with any, I guess anything really. You know, it forces you to kind of look up and you see other people, and you don't retreat back into the cocoon of friendship and comfort there.
Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, certainly in terms of travel stuff, if you're going on a journey and one thing you want to do is learn about the place you're going and meet the people along the way, then that's time to do it on your own, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been an absolutely enlightening conversation, and a conversation I can safely say unlike one we've had before on the show. So it's almost with some regret that I have to bring us to the final segment of the show, which is last thoughts. And in this segment, we ask our guests two questions, Alistair, and you can just answer these in order. And the first one is, how can our listeners support you? And the second, if you would like them to take one thing away from your time on the show, what would that be?
People can follow what I do by searching for Alistair Humphreys. I'm on various internet places, and you can buy my books from that. Yeah. And what I would love people to do is go wait till the weather gets a bit warmer and grab a couple of friends and just go sleep on top of a hill just once. Yeah. I'm not asking you to do it a lot of times. Just try this once. Try something different once. I think it gives a great perspective on your normal real life. Just go sleep on a hill.
That's
great advice.
Grant, you and I want to take a camping trip once the thaw hits.
Yeah, I'm in. I have do you remember that story I wrote, Vince, for Corey Exquin's project? What was
it? Yeah, absolutely. Latlong.
Latlong, yeah. We have a friend who has this cool project called Latlong, and it's like the stories of places. It's actually similar in like style to Mapcha. And I have a hill called Top of the World, which was a big part of my youth. And I've slept up there a couple of times. Vinny, I'll take you up there. I'll bring you up to St. Cloud.
I'm keeping you at that word because I'd love to be at such a formative place in Grant history.
Yeah, man, let's do it. We'll do it. And that's such great advice and such.
But you have to let me know when you actually do it, not just talk about it.
Of course, of course. Yeah. I will say, like, I get anxiety about when I talk about something and don't do it. So sometimes it's only the anxiety forcing me to do it, but it does eventually get me to do it.
It gets done. That's great. That's great. And we will show notes all of the various platforms that our listeners can find you, interact with you, and follow what you're doing. If you would like them to take one single message away from your time here, what would that be? Or if you've already iterated it, perhaps reiterate it.
Well, the funny thing is, you say iterated. That is like kind of, I think, in the vein of what you're talking about and what we've been talking about this whole time in Get Up and Go, which is that don't think of either a project or an adventure or your life or who you think you are as I need to take this first step, which I will go from, you know, whatever you want. Let's say you want to look good and you want to be fit. Then you're not going to go from 0 to 100, you know. Uh-huh, and it's iterative. And I think if more people were able to really look and take a step back and just iterate and just take the tiniest little step, they might go sleep on a hill and maybe a couple years later they're, you know, biking across the world. <You know?
laughs> Right.
I mean, it does seem like you really jumped in headlong, Mr. Humphreys. But I do think your message is so on point with the micro adventures. And I think just with take everything micro, and then that really does add up to the macro.
Yeah. Think big, start small, but do start.
Yeah. Do start.
Wow. I mean, those three two-word sentences kind of summarize what we're even doing here, right? Yeah. Think big, start small, but do start. Yeah. Well, phenomenally well said. And I got to say, you're a very interesting guy on top of everything. And,
yeah.
And very kind to make the time to talk to us. It's early morning here in Minneapolis. Where is it? What is it? London time? Is it
one or two?
It's 2 in the afternoon, so which is time for a cup of tea.
Great.
Man, well, I need some coffee, man.
In an act of solidarity, I'll have coffee. But we do have a final request of you, if you'd be so kind. We like to sign our show off every week the same way with our kind of our mantra, our dogma, which is ship it. And if we could get you to give us a ship it and one for our guests, that would be great.
What, to say ship it?
Yep.
Yes. In fact, you just did. But if you'd like to take a running start at it.
More conviction, perhaps.
I'll say it with gusto.
Yeah.
Ship it.